morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition, another episode, another Perils of Pauline episode of The Other Side of Midnight. The good ship, The Other Side of Midnight. I'm going to kind of explain next week that metaphor because it's going to be added to the things that we're doing here. I mean, have you looked around at the world? Those weird, flaky, bizarre things that people used to talk about at this time of night. I mean, come on, they're coming so thick and fast that if you were in an alligator-infested swamp, all you would have to do is step from scandal to scandal to scandal. What the heck is going on with the Trump campaign? I mean, we're not going to digress ourselves tonight into that, but on Sunday, there is the next big debate between her and between him and Hillary. And my projection, based on that this is a script, is that he's going to win hands down. There'll be no doubt that Donald Trump wins that debate. Now, that was a projection I was making before the bombshells of this afternoon, this 11-year-old videotape with him saying the most extraordinary things about women. And again, I go back to what George Lambert and I have talked about many times in relation to the campaign. These are archetypal symbols. This is archetypal consciousness kind of floating around like icons in a huge noosphere. And the male-female dichotomy in this election, the polarizations between black and white, Repub, Dem, male-female, gay, straight, all these polarizations, but this ISIS phenomenology, this miasma of feminism surrounding this election, exactly what the hyperdimensional model predicted. It's part of why we're saying Hillary is not going to be the candidate. Now, I'm kind of surprised at this point that maybe Trump is not going to be the candidate. Wouldn't it be remarkable if Carly Fiorina steps in and is by acclamation? I mean, anything is possible. We try to talk about on this show things that are constrained, things that have some basis in science, in rationality, in logic. We are in free fall, everybody. We are in free fall. This is the Twilight Zone writ large. Now, against that backdrop, we have a killer storm working its way up the continental coast of the eastern United States as we speak. That storm, from our analysis, appears to be intended, appears to be designed, it appears to be guided. To what ends, we're going to discuss over the next 2 hours. When we come back, I'm going to introduce my first guest. We only have for a limited period of time, so I'm going to try to make maximum use, because what's going on tonight on the East Coast, and in a weird extension, what's going on tonight in the campaign, is social and geoengineering on a mega scale. And you're going to hear about some even more impressive geoengineering feats going on in places where you maybe never even heard of the places. Again, we only have Dane for a little while, and we're going to have him back, but this snapshot of what this diversion, this campaign is about against the backdrop of the real things that are imprinting themselves in human history as we approach this, as I've said many, many times in the physics, this incredible hyperdimensional torsion nodal point where everything is rushing toward... what? An extraordinary climax, an extraordinary crescendo, an extraordinary ping. When we come back, my guest and I will attempt to explore the obvious geopolitical and geoengineering implications of what's going on with Hurricane Matthew tonight on the East Coast. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and I would caution you, we shall return. Yes, to the dulcet tones of Jimi Hendrix. Dulcet, well, maybe not dulcet, maybe dulcimer. Along the Watchtower. Okay. There is a gorgeous crescent moon up there tonight. If you want to join us in this conversation under a crescent moon, Facebook and Twitter, upper left-hand corner of the homepage, theothersideofmidnight.com. By all means, tonight you're going to want to get in on the action because this raises such profound questions. So without further ado, let me begin our introductions. This is kind of get a little bit interesting because Dane Wigington is a former employee of the Bechtel Power Company and was a licensed contractor in California and Arizona specializing in solar energy. He's been engaged in constant climate geoengineering research for over a decade and has put all his focus, efforts, and energy now in geoengineering issues when he began to lose very significant amounts of solar uptake due to the ever-increasing solar obscuration caused from jet aircraft spraying the skies over his forest home. He also noted that significant decline in forest health was occurring and appeared to be accelerating. Extensive testing and research into the geoengineering issue was commenced and has continued now since 2002. Dane is the lead researcher for www.geoengineeringwatch.org and has investigated all levels of geoengineering and stratospheric aerosol geoengineering, called SAG, to HARP. He has appeared in numerous films and radio interviews to educate the public on these issues, and we welcome him tonight, however briefly, on the other side of midnight. Dane, welcome to the show.
Very glad to be here, Richard, and thank you very much for your attention to this incredibly dire issue that's truly the biggest untold story on the planet today, and that's astounding considering how visible it is in our skies.
I was going to say, let's hit it right on the head there. If this is so big and huge, how come it's not an MSM story? How come it seems to be ignored even in the face of such extraordinary evidence like Hurricane Matthew?
It's not just ignored, it's aggressively spun and tried to be marginalized. And when we look at why it's not touched, I think we should consider issues like the illegal federal gag order right now on all National Weather Service and all NOAA employees. Those in power are trying desperately to hide this issue for obvious reasons. The liability is incomprehensible. We're talking about 70 years of climate engineering that's been radically ramped up in the last decade and a half. And truly the consequences, the documentable consequences of what they have done are beyond quantification. And there's so much more that we can't even really fully begin to evaluate as far as the damage done. But mathematically speaking, climate engineering, which is nothing short of weather warfare, which is categorized as solar radiation management and other aspects of these programs, mathematically speaking, it's the greatest assault on the life forms of the planet today. Short of nuclear cataclysm, it's the greatest threat we face, period.
Well, in the scenario that Matthew was an engineered and guided storm, it represents the most extraordinary weapon of mass destruction you could conceive of, shy of global thermonuclear war. So let's start with Matthew. Do you have evidence, independent of our research and others we're going to bring on later in the show, that Matthew, in fact, is just not a normal hurricane?
We do. In fact, we posted imagery at geoengineeringwatch.org several days ago that...
Okay, give that website out again more slowly.
Our website is geoengineeringwatch.org. We're the largest website on the subject online, period, and we are non-political. We don't sell anything. We're a data repository. We posted NASA imagery, not just of areas where hurricanes are being actively suppressed, but also where they can be augmented. And we posted one satellite image of Matthew that the space weather site tried to call the signature of what we know to be radio frequency gravity waves, but we see the same radio frequency signature. In fact, if your listeners go to geoengineeringwatch.org, look under the recent column for the latest post that includes NASA satellite images that will shock anyone. You don't need to know anything about meteorology. If you look at those images, you'll have no question.
Okay, we have a whole bunch of your images on the other side of midnight under radio with pictures. So just scroll down to Dane's items. Number one says, off the coast of Australia. These look like standing waves or gravity waves in the atmosphere.
their radio frequency signature. And again, this is what's termed as, we get a lot of labels that are simply not appropriate. We have clouds being named that have never been noted before. Undulatus apparatus named in 2008. Did that cloud not exist before? So they simply make it up as they go. And let me reframe the threat from geoengineering. Although to steer a cyclone is an unimaginable weapon, but the overall ramifications of climate engineering are much, much bigger. We're talking about programs that shred the ozone layer. And your listeners can look this up. I don't want anybody to believe what I'm saying. I want them to investigate it. Geoengineering is destroying the ozone layer. The science is very clear on the ramifications of filling the atmosphere with particulates. And the ozone readings now, or the UV readings on the surface, and I've been communicating with a 40-year aeronautics engineer, former NASA employee. We supplied him with metering, and I mean, he's as alarmed as he could be. We know that we're not just seeing massive amounts of UVB that's perhaps 1,000% higher from our readings than what we're being told. We're seeing massive amounts of UVC. UVC is the last spectrum of UV radiation before X-ray. Mm. We're told UVC stops 100,000 feet up in the atmosphere, no longer the case. So this is a situation where the military industrial complex is so invested in these programs of manipulating climate that they're simply doubling down. The more damage they do, the more they ramp the programs up, and it's a very, very downward cycle. The consequences will be total if we continue on this road.
Dane, I have a very obvious common sense question. Since all these folks, whatever program they're in, black ops, oligarchs, 0.01%, whatever little group we're now looking at as being the bad guys behind all this, they live on the same planet we all do. Why would they do something dumber and stupider than any cat or dog that knows not to foul their own nest? What's the payoff? Why can they be exempt and 7 billion other people go to hell in a handbasket because they're basically toying with the planet?
It's a primary question for most people, and I would answer it in two ways. First, how many examples do we have of those in power already conducting themselves in a manner that will guarantee our mutual destruction if it continues? We have enough nuclear weaponry to mathematically destroy life on Earth 12,000 times over. We have a triple nuclear volcano in Fukushima with no known technology to fix that problem, yet they're building 60 more nuke plants right now. They're reinstituting formerly mothballed plants in some countries. This is a recipe for certain suicide as well. So we have enough examples of that type of insanity. But next, I would relate it this way. There's no cure for that kind of desire of power that we know those running the world are inflicted with. And if we relate this to a cancer, does a cancer intend to kill the host? And I would argue no, but a cancer intends to proliferate at any cost. The host eventually dies. And I would argue that's the scenario we're on. And not enough people in the loop understand the totality of what's happening. And those at the top are not sane enough to consider the consequences of their actions. I would answer it in those ways, because the whole ship is going down, period. We simply have a headless, heartless, soulless, mindless beast right now, and each component, each cell of that beast is simply playing its part in the play. But yet, when you put it all together, it's a path toward certain near-term total global extinction. This is a mathematical certainty on this trajectory. We know we've lost 60% of Earth's wildlife populations in the last 40 years. We're losing 200 to 300 species every single day, plant, animal, and insect, to extinction. That's 15,000 times the background rate. That's 1.5% of normal. On this trajectory, we're not going to be here much longer. We have to change course.
For people who are thinking that you're either, escape from Bellevue, or I'm having an early, early, early Halloween at night, let's give some background. You said this is a program, a government program, into research for control of the weather that goes back something like 70 years. What were some of the early experiments, and were they admitted to by the military, or were they disguised?
Yeah, and for those that, again, roll their eyes and walk away, I would simply challenge them to show the courage to actually investigate, because I never ask anyone to believe me. But we have an extraordinary record of this process of expansion of climate intervention.
So let's get specific. Let's start with
Project Popeye. Okay. Project Popeye in Vietnam. Project Storm Fury. We have.
Hang on. You have to describe what these are.
Project Popeye was the effort to cause precipitation over the Ho Chi Minh Trail in Vietnam that was so successful that by 1976, the UN passed a resolution banning weather modification in wartime purposes. But that didn't stop anybody. And we have Project Storm Fury was the early intervention with cyclones. So we have 750-page Senate documents posted at geoengineeringwatch.org with a lot of the key areas highlighted so people don't have to go through all of it. If your listeners search massive Senate documents geoengineering, they can find the original documents. And that's a simply indisputable proof. These programs have been on a massive scale for about 7 decades, and we have multiple federal agencies involved. We have universities involved. It's the scope and scale of this is massive, but quite simply, everybody involved, their paychecks, their pensions, or worse, are dependent on them not admitting to parts of what they're involved with. Many are compartmentalized. So you have this massive mechanism working, and you have no official admission coming from anywhere. And it's truly perplexing, astounding, and even the population, Richard, that can see with their own eyes something radical is obviously going on in our skies, simply refuse to acknowledge their own sense of reason and do a little research and figure out what's going on.
Is part of this because it's almost like if they, whoever they are, can control the weather, then they basically are gods and they, you know, you don't pull on Superman's cape or spit into the wind. In other words, people, if they really admit that this is real, they kind of throw up their hands and say, well, then there's nothing I can do about it. Who the hell cares?
Yeah, that's an unfortunate fallback position for many people, and I hope they abandon that position, because all of us can have a much greater effect than we realize if we simply keep putting one foot in front of the other, waking those up around us, and that becomes exponential if those people then wake others up around them. And there's a much bigger issue here. It's not just the attempt to control the weather in order to topple countries, destabilize them without those countries even knowing they were at war. And this is what's been going on for decades. But there's a bigger issue at hand, and that issue is the attempt by the power structure, in order to keep business as usual, to keep the military-industrial juggernaut of insanity moving forward without the population understanding how desperate our situation is. They're trying to hide the severity of damage done to the climate system by doing yet more damage at the same time. And this is the pharmaceutical military-industrial approach to the planet, if you will. So we have mass methane expulsion happening right now in the Arctic. In fact, some of the research in the last couple of years, methane plumes from the Laptev Sea were observed up to a kilometer wide, and they observed thousands of them. We have methane geysers spewing methane into the atmosphere. It migrates from the seafloor. This is formerly frozen methane hydrate deposit that's thawing out because the oceans are unimaginably warm and warming more rapidly by the day. The methane thaws, migrates to the surface, enters the atmosphere, and methane is astoundingly more potent than CO2. And this is not about Al Gore or carbon credits, neither of which have any validity, but it's about reality. And that methane's covering the planet right now like a layer of glass. And in their attempt to block some of the sun's incoming thermal radiation, they're actually trapping more heat than they deflect, again, shredding the ozone layer, disrupting the hydrological cycle. So we have droughts and fires everywhere, which causes even more greenhouse gas, forcing everything they touch, everything they intervene with, has unimaginably negative consequences. So this is simply, again, a recipe. Aside from all the other destruction the human race has done to the planet, geoengineering tops everything.
Well, let's go to, Radio with Pictures, because we don't have a lot of time here, and we have a pretty large field to cover. Kind of narrate what we're looking at, because these are examples you picked out of the public databases. These are not secret classified images. These are available on commercial satellite feeds now of massive changes in the Earth that are only, you say, due to conscious, intentional human activity on a planetary scale.
They are. And again, we look at figures like global dimming, or this terminology of global dimming, which your listeners may not be familiar with, and they can research that term. The term global dimming refers to how much of the sun's direct rays that reached the Earth 5 decades ago that no longer do. And we're talking about 25% to 30%, depending on the study. So that's an immense amount of direct sunlight to be blocked. And this is what brought me onto this issue. Again, my home has a large solar system, was the cover of the world's largest renewable energy magazine. And this is, you know, this is my background. And when I began to lose 60, 70, 80% of my solar uptake, up to 80% from whatever these aircraft were emitting, that was clearly not condensation. And we have some of the largest
commercial solar. Okay, so when you say you're losing the energy, you're looking at the electrical meter attached to your solar cells, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when these clouds, these artificial contrails, as they're called, or chemtrails, are spread by aircraft, a fleet of aircraft, a mysterious fleet of aircraft that we've been talking about for 10, 15 years now, you measure an absolute decrease in the amount of energy produced by the solar cells that you're monitoring, right?
Correct. A staggering decrease.
Okay. If there is this amazing decrease going on, then how come the planet isn't shrouded in ice? How come we're not entering a new ice age? Because I know on a cloudy day here in the desert, the temperature can significantly fall.
Because they're trapping more heat than they deflect, because they're shredding the ozone layer, which is, allows more radiant heat to penetrate through. So it's like getting, you know, sunburned on the beach on a cloudy day. You have thermal energy still penetrating the planet. And when you have an ozone layer that's being ripped to shreds, and again, more heat that's being trapped than being deflected, and you add in the effect on the boreal forests that are burning to the ground, Siberia's lost 100 million acres a year. And for example, in the forest fires, and this goes back to the heat, the greenhouse gas forcing, why is the planet warming? Because when you, on the drought situation and the burning of the forest, I want to, if I could focus on that issue for a moment, although climate warming, global warming is absolutely real, the droughts and the boreal fires that are burning around the globe can most directly be attributed to climate engineering. Why? Because when you put particulates in the atmosphere, it's too many condensation nuclei. So you completely disrupt convection, you disrupt the hydrological cycle, the rain cycle, and you diminish atmospheric relative humidity. So the droughts can be most directly attributed to climate engineering, because how else could atmospheric relative humidity, since 1945, when we know these programs started, it has gone down, not up. That simply defies the laws of physics.
Some years ago, I tracked down with a friend of mine, a meteorologist named Mike Castle, I think was his name. And I put him in touch with Art Bell, and we did some shows on Art Bell. That was back when chemtrails were just beginning to kind of hit the kind of alternative radar. And through Mike, I tried, and I was unable to do it, to borrow a Learjet to get up to like 40,000 feet so we could get actual samples of the particulates in the very then disguised and controversial chemtrails. That did not work, but it got me in touch with Castle, who was able to put me in touch with some other people, who finally put me in touch with an archive comment or paper by no less than, I believe, Henry Kissinger, discussing the need to spread particulate aerosols in the stratosphere to combat global warming from the sun, from the background, from the solar system, not just man-made effects. And that program appears now to have been what we've been seeing for 10 or 15 years, even though it's totally unacknowledged.
I knew Mike Castle first.
Oh, okay.
He was a good guy. As far as – if I can put that as into context, what was the initial effect of climate engineering? If you might remember – Richard, that we had an anomalous cooling period from about 1945 to 1975, so much so that by the mid-70s, some of the meteorologists were trying to figure out what was going on, how that cooling could be.
Oh, I remember in June sitting in Manhattan writing a story, excuse me, for American Way magazine about the coming ice age.
There you go. And this is where you had no
acknowledgement. While it was snowing outside.
Yes, and this is – now, let me forget to touch base on chemical ice nucleation, which is happening all over the globe.
Only got two more minutes in the segment. Can you stay a little while longer?
I'll hang till I can finish these questions, yeah. You want me to try to elaborate on the cooling period for a moment?
Absolutely,
okay.
Yes.
And I'll stick with you. But we had the initial effect of geoengineering is it did cause a cooling effect. They started over the poles, and before the negative aspects kicked in, there was a cooling period from 75 or from 45 to 75. But then all the negative aspects kicked in, some that I've already mentioned, some of the feedback loops. The consequences start to take their toll. The warming commenced again with a vengeance. The warmer it gets, the more consequences they cause. They just keep doubling down. The cooling effect from climate engineering was temporary with great consequences. That effect is long gone. Now what they're doing is only making the whole situation worse, not better.
Wow. Well, okay, on that note, wonderful note, gosh. Definitely you're an upper, Dane. Anyway, you're on the other side of midnight. My guest this morning is Dame Wiggingland, and we're talking about geoengineering, kind of terraforming Terra without the inhabitants realizing that terraforming, which is planetary engineering, technically trying to make other planets like the Earth, while we're turning the Earth into some kind of other planet. Makes no sense to me. Hey, hang in there. Call us. Communicate. Type in on Facebook and Twitter, upper left-hand corner of our homepage. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return.
Riders on the storm, into this house we're born.
And M, as usual, has come up with a sterling piece of bumper music. You all remember
like
this
a dog without a bone, an actor out alone.
Riders on the storm. And at many levels, it's a storm. Back to my guest this morning, Dane Wiggington. Dane, big picture, if we don't get them to stop, the planet will become insufferable and unlivable for everybody, them included. And you say they're doing this because they're just too damn dumb and stupid. They have such short time horizons, and they imagine they're basically God, so nothing will happen to them.
They're simply too invested to turn back. You have a commitment to this as a weapon, as a means of trying to mask from the public the severity of the damage done, again, by doing yet more damage. And we've seen this mentality before, Richard, in the Gulf of Mexico. You remember the chemical Crexit that was used?
Oh, my God,
To sink an
Robin oil. Went down and did a whole rescue operation, made up homeopathic remedies from basically a poison gulf.
Exactly. So, but look, if we look at that mentality, so they used a chemical ban throughout the globe. The environmental impact report said that that chemical made the situation 50 plus times more toxic, and they used it anyway because it helped to hide the problem. And it's the same mentality here, same mentality that who in their right mind would take a pharmaceutical when we watch the TV commercials with the latest pharmaceutical being introduced with 20 side effects that are far worse than what it claims to cure. And the next commercial is a lawyer. If you took last week's pharmaceutical, you can sue. I mean, it's the same mentality. So you have the military-industrial complex, Raytheon, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, all invested in these programs, unimaginably invested. The liability they've created
but
is immense.
But Dane, they all have kids and grandkids, and they go to school, and they go to PTA meetings, and they have car payments, and they're just people. They're just Americans. They're not part of an evil thingy. How do they go along with a program that's destroying everything?
I wish I could answer that, and I know some of these people. I know I've spoken to a Jeppesen, that's the coordinator, the facility or the institution that coordinates global flights for Boeing, Jeppesen Aviation. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken to a top executive there that I know he has kids. And the moment we got on the geoengineering issue, he just turned his back and walked away. He was unwilling to discuss it. His paycheck and his pension depends on that. So we have – how do you explain human nature that does what it does? How do we explain that? I can't explain that. It's simply a defense mechanism that somehow convinces the individual that their immediate scenario, their next week's paycheck, is more important than the future of the planet. And this is, we have this mentality
now,
pervasive.
Is this in part because they just can't imagine big enough that any people or themselves certainly, but any collection of people against God's will, against God's majesty, against the preparation of the garden for humans, that anything we do could possibly make any difference in God's plan? In other words, have they basically given up responsibility or stewardship for what God gave us.
I think that's a very accurate summation. I do. I mean, you have various ideologies, but all of them amount to a certain type of rationalization that causes them just to go along with whatever they're told to do. We can chalk it up to Stockholm syndrome or other types of mental states of mind, but we have how many examples of people participating in heinous crimes or activities that would lead to their own demise at some point. And this is a difficult thing to explain with human nature. I'm not built that way. I can't turn the other way. I quit Bechdel Power when I was very young because of things I saw, as I told you off the air. We're all wired differently, but we must somehow break that barrier down and wake people up to the severity and the immediacy of what's happening, because people right now are trained to believe that such changes will take at minimum centuries. This could not be further from the truth. In fact, if we stay in the current trajectory, the current math that we have based on temperature escalations, atmospheric methane saturation, we could be looking at a 7, 8, 9 degrees C temperature rise by 2025. That means we're all gone. That's how severe the situation is. Also, if I can add more credence to this, the temperature readings we monitor indicate that we are past 3.5 C of warming right now, past that point. You probably hear a lot of talk about staying below 2 C. We're past 3.5 because we see an underreporting of temperatures everywhere we monitor, everywhere. We see a radical underreporting. If we're past 3.5 degrees C right now, and it appears we are, then we are past the baseline at which humans have existed on this planet already. It doesn't mean we all go away tomorrow, but it means that we are in complete free fall, and the planet's species cannot adapt.
Well, it means that the incredible complex ecosystem interrelationships, us included, that keep 7 billion human beings alive, are deteriorating to where the point is it will not be able to support 7 billion human beings and billions of people will die.
It's not supporting already. You know, if you leap off a 100-story building, some people might think they're flying until they hit the sidewalk. You know, just because you leap off that building doesn't mean you're flying. You're in free fall.
Well, let me raise another issue, and then I want to come back to Matthew. Is it possible, and this is going to sound crazy, but we talk about crazy things on this time of night. Is it possible that these guys, the ones that really are mandating this, actually do have an escape hatch? They actually do have someplace else to go. And the plan is to basically change the environment, change home to where it's not suitable for us, clear the decks, wait a few hundred years, let things kind of reestablish, and then design a society where they are in total 1,000% control.
I think that's...
Otherwise, if they're committing suicide along with the rest of us, it makes no sense, Dane. There's got to be a factor we don't see.
Well, there's several factors. One, if we look at the various forms of psychosis and psychoanalyzation of people with various forms of psychosis, there's a common thread, and that common thread is a near total lack of comprehension of the consequences even to themselves. This is a medical fact. Two, if we look at paleo data, past events, past mass extinctions like the Petum event, the Paleocene, Eocene thermal maximum 55 million years ago, methane mass expulsion, not nearly as severe as what we appear to be heading into now. There was about a 10 to 20 million year equilibrium period afterward. That's a long time to stay underground. So again, all empires have always bitten off more than they can chew. The consequences now are total. You have countries around the globe, by the way, engaged in climate engineering. Russia and China are at it as well. We don't know. We can't know the degree to which each power center is pushing and pulling on the climate. So we have a virtual tug of war over the climate system going on right now, and it's unraveling by the day. Absolutely unraveling by the day.
So you set me up for the perfect segue question. Who the hell sent Matthew as a weapon to try to take out the nation's launch capacity at Cape Canaveral last night?
Well, again, it would be impossible to say if we look at ionosphere heaters like HAARP, and too many people look at just HAARP because HAARP is just one example of dozens of those types of ground-based radio frequency transmitters around the globe. There's a large network of them. Their energies can be combined. So we can't know who's pushing and pulling on what. But if we look at Matthew, if we look at the 90-degree turn that it made, much like Sandy, how did they know Hurricane Sandy would make a 90-degree unprecedented westerly turn a week ahead? Because that's what was scheduled. And if we look at Sandy's strength, Sandy was 940 millibar, 1,000 mile circulation, should have been a Cat 3, Cat 4, was a Cat 1. So although it was steered into that location, it was certainly diminished. Its strength was diminished.
Wait. It was diminished so that the energy could be spread over that 1,000 miles, the amount of area pushing up that water, that huge bubble of water, the so-called storm surge. That's what destroyed the coast of New York and New Jersey during Sandy. It was designed to be the worst possible carrier of mass destruction.
It certainly dispersed that energy over a wider area. There's no arguing that. But it's hard to tell. If we look at Cyclone Haiyan that cut a swath through the Philippines with a landfall of 195 miles an hour,
how many miles an hour?
It was at one point it peaked at 195, I believe.
How
sustained winds. So okay. That's the strongest landfall ever to occur, Cyclone Haiyan. So if we look at something like that very anomalously strengthened before it hit land and decimated the Philippines, I would argue that they could have even done more damage with Sandy. Perhaps it was a measured blow. But back to Matthew. Matthew made a 90-degree northerly turn, contrary to its initial predictions. Then and I posted on this last Monday, and I stated that I thought they would allow that cyclone to spin hard over areas and countries which they have agendas that would perhaps make it beneficial for them to decimate, like Haiti, like Cuba, and that's exactly what happened. Mm. And as it got close to the Florida coast, if you note the change in actual occurrence compared to what was predicted yesterday, that cyclone stayed fairly far offshore or far enough off not to really impact in the manner that they originally projected. And
well,
provide
let me raise an idea here. Initially, when I saw this, I said, my God, we're basically at war. This is a geoengineering weather war, right? And a target. And I looked at where they were heading initially, which was just north of Miami. Avoiding Miami, north of around Daytona, you know, then looked like, oh my God, it's looking like the Cape. Now, we've tried on this program some what we call intention experiments, where you basically say to people, look, get in resonance with this damn thing, move it offshore, and dissipate it. The first experiment was done on Thursday night, night before last, and then the next one was done last night. This is our third night. This thing has moved. It actually jogged almost around Cape Canaveral. If you look at the track, it made a sharp little right-hand jog. Then it went back to the original track parallel to the coast after it got past the Cape, because I had talked a lot about the Cape as being the target last night. Is this a war between consciousness and technology, and we're kind of like trying to pick up the ball and keep this thing from killing an awful lot more people?
I'm not underestimating consciousness, but I'm stating that I believe those in power that are pulling the weather manipulation levers at this point. We've had an 11-year hurricane drought in the U.S. for major hurricane landfalls while the rest of the world is being slaughtered. The pictures that I posted, which you guys reposted, showing the intentional degradation of the circulations as they come off Africa. There's been a massive cyclone suppression in the Atlantic Basin by the U.S. NATO power structure. So again, it's impossible for me to state why or what kept that cyclone from making landfall. We have other countries involved with this, trying to push and pull. But what I felt is that they're looking for cover for a lot of things that are happening in the Middle East right now. We know we have the U.S. stating on the record that they might start bombing Syrian troops. We have Russia stating if your jets do try to do that, we'll shoot them out of the sky. We have World War III about to start. We have a lot of other things happening. And conveniently, Matthew has eclipsed all of it, all of it. Slaughtered Haiti, slaughtered Cuba, but didn't really do that much to the U.S., did it? So if we look at it in that context too, we can speculate a lot about this event providing an awful lot of cover, and the media hyped the heck out of it yesterday. Most of it didn't happen yet anyway, and we'll see where it goes from here. But there's so many agendas being carried out. And let me put another example, if I could, Richard, and you can elaborate on this after. For another type of operation like this, remember in 2014, we had 2014-2015 winter, snow in Boston again and again and again and again. Do you remember how much that was hyped up?
Oh, yeah.
Record snow. They didn't talk about the fact that we were 80, 90 degrees in the Sierras with zero snow at 14,000 feet. So that was a method to divide and confuse the population as to the true state of the climate, because how could it be warming when there's record snow in Boston, when the planet's in total meltdown? 2014, record warm year. 2015 broke that. 2016's breaking it again. We've just passed the 16th or 17th consecutive month of all-time record warm months. We're seeing temperatures off the scale. Climate engineering is making it worse overall now, not better. But a lot of this is a psychological operation as well, and whether it's to confuse the population, distract them from what else is really going on, we could put a lot of different factors into this. So there's a lot going on. It's a mistake to put it into one particular box.
But you do agree that the Matthew thing is separate and adjunct to the long-term turning up the water on the frog problem. In other words, somehow something is coming to a head. This is such blatant engineering of a storm. Certainly anybody who knows anything knows exactly what's going on, and the amount of energy and the amount of threat. I mean, if this thing had been 20 miles closer, we'd be talking about thousands of deaths. Remember all the people that haven't left? What happens the next time when they look at this and they say, ah, those guys just overhype it, and they don't leave, and we wind up with tens of thousands of deaths?
And they can make that happen anytime they want.
That's what I'm saying. This was a preset to what's coming next. So who's the enemy? Who's doing this? Who's the other enemy? Who's the threat? Was it the United States? Who is the victim here? In other words, was this an aggression against us? Or is this retaliation against stuff we've been doing and just don't admit?
I think we have to start with the fact that those who still imagine that our government and our military is acting on behalf of the American population, that's a very naive notion. People need to wake up to that. I'm not saying we don't have good men and women in the military, but they're being used as mercenaries in many cases against their own people and their own population. In the case of the drought in California, which is beyond horrific, it's much worse than what's being stated, because the UV issue is off the charts. The forests are dying everywhere. And that is an absolute direct result of climate engineering programs that are organized and orchestrated by the U.S. military at the head. And we know we have civilian aircraft. When you talked about the mysterious aircraft, they're not so mysterious, because we have photographs, military tankers with nozzles visible spraying at altitude. These are on geoengineeringwatch.org. We have photographs of commercial aircraft also being used, not with the commercial personnel. We don't believe the commercial personnel are involved with this at all. They wouldn't need to be. Why would they be involved? But the aircraft have retrofit nozzles mounted on the pylons directly above the engine exhaust stream. We have close-up photographs of these nozzles. There's no question these aircraft are being used, because we can identify them from the ground. So we have cataclysmic consequences happening to the U.S. population from programs that are being conducted by the U.S. government. And our Senate documents, our presidential documents, prove this fact. We're not speculating at all. And the worst part of this all, and we haven't touched on this, aside from all the atmospheric degradation, Earth's life support systems, the climate system, we are breathing everything they spray. And we're talking about tens of millions of tons of heavy metal nanoparticulates annually. That's the stated goal of the climate engineers. And we know mathematically it has to be in that range or higher from the testing we've done. So when we look at the neurological diseases that are going off the charts, we are inhaling an unimaginable amount of these particulates. It's building up in our systems. It's bioavailable. It's building up in the environment. So we have a very real and immediate fight for life, and we have our government behind these programs. Okay. That's the fact of the matter.
Can you stay 10 more minutes? Because I'd like to bring Cheryl and Keith in, because I know they have some questions for you.
I'll hang to one. And I appreciate the professional conduct on the show, Richard. You're an exceptional host. I appreciate that.
Well, I have lots of questions. I have to have you back. So, okay. Cheryl Jones is an old colleague of mine. She's not old. I'm being horrible this morning.
Thank you.
She's an old friend and a very
Find
young.
Find a videotape there.
I know. And we used to eavesdrop her on her by satellite when she was sitting at the CNN anchor desk, because I was setting up Enterprise in Washington. We had all these free satellite things from NASA. And she had a whole bunch of guys, teenage guys, in the classes I was, you know, working with, that really fell in love with Cheryl Jones. So I've never told Cheryl that we were watching her when she was putting on makeup and adjusting microphones, because they used to send all this stuff live up on the satellite, because they figured nobody could watch. We could watch. courtesy of NASA.
Well, we kind of knew it. We were just doing that for you.
Oh, wasn't that special? And, of course, Keith Laney, member of our imaging team, wide background, multifaceted polymath, et cetera, et cetera. Go and read their bios on The Other Side of Midnight tonight. Let me get to the heart of this. Cheryl, you worked at network television. You have a meteorology background. Is anything that Dane is saying conflicting with what you know?
No, I find it just mind-boggling. I've followed Dane's work for quite a long, long time and have been concerned about what is happening in our atmosphere and the constant spraying that has been going on all over, not just here, but obviously around the world, and the toxins that are in the sprays. And I have a question. What, Dane, what possibilities are there for the use of the aluminum that's included in the chemtrail spraying? I know there are many, and the conductivity of the aluminum is quite varied. So can you tell me what possible uses that would be included in the chemtrail spraying for?
And let me back into that. And what we try also to, if I could, on Geoengineering Watch, and not to be, you know, too hard on that term, the chemtrail term, because it does fit in a certain sense, but we try to get people to use the climate science terms because the chemtrail term is the buzzword term that makes media marginalize us immediately. I know for this show it doesn't matter, but I just wanted to point that out to listeners. If you're introducing this to other people, try to stick to the geoengineering, climate engineering, and so forth. Just wanted to point that out for the listeners if they're trying to tell their family and friends so that people don't go Google a term that doesn't lead them anywhere. But to answer your questions, and they're very good questions, let me back into that. The atmospheric conductivity, a lot of uses for that with various NMOD weapons, environmental atmospheric weapons, over-the-horizon radar, various aspects that make a conductive atmosphere desirable. About aluminum specifically, the stated objective from the geoengineers that makes aluminum desirable, very high albedo, very reflective. That's the goal, solar radiation management to deflect some of the sun's incoming thermal radiation. Also, aluminum has a very low coagulation rate, so the particles don't clump together as much as other particles. Now, nobody talks about, you don't see any science circle talking about the fact that this stuff all settles down through the air column where we inhale it, as I previously stated. Mm-hmm. Never brought up, ever. When you hear climate circles, the IPCC, the largest scientific panel ever created on any subject in human history, when they talk about geoengineering, that it must be done, our last alternative, they never talk about the fact that that fallout's coming down on the entire web of life. So those are the basic issues with aluminum: high reflectivity, low albedo, electrically conductive atmosphere. They don't care about the consequences.
When you come back, which is going to be the next show and we have you, we're going to talk about another use for aluminum. Aluminum is crucial in the whole torsion field technology game because aluminum is one of the few nuclei that actually reflects torsion. And I believe there's a huge hidden torsion component to this geoengineering program, and we'll have a lot of fun talking about that. Okay, Keith, you're being very silent. You have any questions before we have to let Dane go?
No. Wouldn't argue that point, though, Richard. I agree with you. I wouldn't argue that point at all. There's many, many aspects, and I'm.
It isn't an either or. It's definitely a both, or it's more than a
both. I agree.
Okay.
I agree.
Keith, you're up.
Yeah. Well, my question to Dane is one that was put forth on the chat window here, and I agreed with. I pretty much have this question too. Can you explain the mechanism they might use for steering a hurricane?
If you can create atmospheric pressure zones, for example, with the ionosphere heaters like HARP. If you can superheat the upper layers of the atmosphere, and this is the stated purpose for the ionosphere heaters, to superheat the atmosphere, cause a bulge in it, which would create resistance for an incoming ICBM and, in theory, burn it up before it penetrated. So if you can create those domes, you're creating a void underneath, and such a circulation, like a cyclone, would then try to move toward that void. You're creating a low-pressure zone that would move it toward that direction. So in that manner, the potential to steer these storms is absolutely real. And when, again, Sandy was a primary example. How could they have possibly known 7 days ahead of time that storm was going to do what it did?
Are you aware scheduled. There was a big hurricane offshore during 9/11 that kind of disappeared, that's part of a larger conspiracy theory that it was being steered at that time as well?
I am aware of that, and I on the 9/11 issue, I'm in fairly consistent contact with Richard Gage, if you know who Richard is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I feel that right now that issue is so hard for people to face and accept. And the
well, we get into what was called Goebbels territory. Remember Goebbels, you know, the propaganda guy for Hitler?
Exactly.
Basically paraphrasing, if you tell a big enough lie, everybody will believe you because in their own heart and soul, they're too cowardly, craven, and timid to possibly tell a lie that big. So they attribute a huge truth slash a lie to the truth because they simply couldn't make one up themselves.
Relating to the official narrative.
Exactly.
Yeah, and this is, and that's, you know, this is an issue I touch on as well, even though geoengineering is my primary focus. But if buildings can't recognize, or if the public can't recognize a building like Building 7 that never got hit by anything coming down in front of their face, then their denial is quite total at that point. And we have a lot of that in our society. So we're trying to break that down in every way we can. We're making progress. And I would argue this, Richard, as I wind down here, that the biosphere implosion that we're seeing can't be hidden much longer. And I would argue that for those who are frustrated with trying to introduce the geoengineering issue, don't give up. If you pass on credible data, and that's why we have free downloadable flyers on our site. You can print them locally. It's much more effective to pass on credible data than to point at the sky and rant.
Do you have the feeling that we're basically approaching a critical mass here like in so many other areas? It's like people's scales are falling from their eyes. And they're looking and considering things that 3 days ago they would never have even imagined they'd be thinking about.
The reason why is because they will not be able to maintain their denial much longer. The walls are caving in right now. We have ecosystems imploding all over the globe. The oceans are completely stratifying. We're heading for Canfield Ocean, dead, lifeless, stratified, superheated oceans. Our reality is not going to be the same much longer. People will be forced to wake up. They'll have no choice. So the more we plant seeds right now, the better chance we'll have as that transition happens. People will understand what's happening and why. It's up to all of us to pass on credible data, sound the alarm while we can, because the overturning of our current paradigm is happening right now.
Well, thank you. Dane Wigington, my guest this morning for the first hour. I really appreciate the extra time. Geoengineering expert. We're going to have Dane back as soon as we can because this is a problem that is not going away.
Gratitude's mine. And in geoengineeringwatch.org, again, is our site. No advertising, no politics, just data repository.
And thanks again. When we come back from the other side of the top of the hour, where we have a nice NBC station break, we'll be getting back to Keith and Charlotte. I'm thinking of Charlotte, North Carolina, because the hurricane is bearing down on Charlotte. It's Cheryl, my old friend Cheryl Jones, who was not old. I keep clarifying that. Anyway, guys, hang in there. You're on the other side of midnight. We shall return. Coming down.
It's the time of the season when love runs high. In this time, give it to me easy and let me try with pleasured hands.
And we are back. A few minutes after the hour here. We got about 5 minutes to go until we break again. Okay, guys, listening to what Dane said, Keith, you were looking at the history of Matthew. Kind of bring us into the conversation of what the hell is going on with this hurricane, which is anything but a natural hurricane, and somebody has their mic open and we're getting terrible feedback. Thank you. Keith, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
I was wondering if it was me getting the feedback.
Nope. Well, kind of. So I'll just go for it.
Well, you know, if we look at this at the storm, it's kind of like Katrina. You know, remember how Katrina had the pentagonal center?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, this one does too.
Well, remember, I got into this back in 2005. Mm-hmm. And you got to kill your mic because we are getting feedback somehow through your computer there. If you go to theothersideofmidnight.com, click on radio with pictures, go down to item number 4. That's a series I did for Enterprise, the Enterprise mission, called Hyperdimensional Hurricanes. And we looked into the physics of how these incredibly geometric eyes could suddenly start popping up in the centers of these very powerful hurricanes. And that got me on the track that, oh my God, there is a technology can do this, and these are hyperdimensional signatures that you look for when you want to see if somebody is tampering with the hurricane.
Well, I've got an example of it on Radio with Pictures on my items. It's picture number one.
Okay, so we scroll down to Keith's items. Item number one, there's Matthew.
Click on it and it'll get big.
Okay.
And then click on it again, it'll get even bigger.
Oh, yeah.
And now we see the same general pentagonal structure in the center. And this one has some little extra added stuff in the middle of it, too. It's, you know, of course, we realize this is moisture, you know, that's boiling all up. And this is a vortex in the center. But, you know.
Well, the way you look at it is the moisture, the water vapor, the ice crystals are like dye in a clear stream. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at the circulation of the pattern imposed by the force field, the field that's affecting the hurricane. And the water is showing you the dimensions and the geometry of the field.
Yes, we're not really sure how they do this. I wish we could have Dane on long enough to, you know, explain a little bit more about this, because this is his topic. And, you know, man, I commend you to have him on, because, you know, I've been reading him for years. And when I realized that he was going to be on with us tonight, I was jumping up and down.
Thank him. She found him.
yeah, great him. But, you know, as you know, we're watching this hurricane, and it formed, and then it formed out in the, you know, in the Caribbean. Well, actually, it formed out in the West Atlantic or East Atlantic, and then came west. But as it formed and came over Haiti, it whooped up into a shape that they blasted us with yesterday morning.
Oh, you mean the so-called clown or skull?
Yeah. Well, yes, we'll get to that in a minute. On my image number two, if you back out and go to Radio Pictures,
okay.
I have a color radar image. Oh, well, it's a color IR image of that same scene that we just looked at just a little later. And in that, you still see the same pentagonal shape in the middle in green. And this one has a three in the middle of it, which, you know, it's water vapor. It's whatever. But, you know, and they put this kind of stuff in an image that they put out in front of us. It always has symbology.
There was a hurricane that came ashore on the west coast of Florida some years ago. And I remember a local TV station popped up a screen grab on their local TV, you know, broadcast. It was some kind of bizarre message, or I forget what it was. It was so blatant. It was so obvious. It was like somebody writing in the clouds using this technology, like, you know, up yours. We can even send you messages.
Well, you know, they're getting so
late. Hold
it
there. We're at 5 after the hour. Other Side of Midnight, my guests this morning, Keith Laney and Cheryl Jones, former anchor at CNN, and an actual real meteorologist who's going to tell us if she's ever seen anything in the clouds in school when she was studying all this stuff that looked anything like we're seeing now. You're on the Other Side of Midnight, and we shall return.
Good night.
Ah, yes, Joni Mitchell on the Other Side of Midnight here on a Saturday morning. Well, thank you, everyone. My guests this morning, Keith Laney and Cheryl Jones. Cheryl, in terms of what Dane was telling us before he left about media hype on this, when you were at CNN, and I remember looking at weather reports, they appeared to be different than they are now. It's like we've become obsessed. It's like they basically become popcorn shows where you bring a beer and you sit there and you watch for hours, binge watch other people's misery unfolding live on TV.
Yes, although technology certainly is far much enhanced from what it was several years ago, and it continues to to get more and more specific and more high-tech as each day passes. I was just thinking about the difference in how we covered hurricanes a few years back. I remember we would have people call in, actually people who were out in the hurricanes and who were victims of the hurricane damage and so on. We would have the live calls on the air. And that added an element that we don't have today. We never seem to get a real personal element, or at least very much of one. And so now, you know, the reporter goes out in the middle of the storm as much as possible, and it's a continuation of the same reporting.
Wait. That started back with Dan Rather.
Satellite pictures of what's happening and what's going on. And, of course, as Keith mentioned, we have the satellite pictures and all the imagery and all the technology is so different now. Who would have ever thought we would see an image of a skull or an evil clown on satellite? So these things are, you know, we've never seen these kinds of things before.
Okay, I think we're going to have a question coming up here on Facebook. By the way, if you want to join the conversation, Facebook or Twitter, upper left-hand corner of the homepage. I'm getting that feedback again, and that means Keith is prepared to introduce something. Keith, go for it.
Okay, well, you know, we were looking at the pentagonal centers of these directed beam weapon storms, and, you know, this one in particular, as it came up, it kind of threaded the needle between all the Caribbean islands and until it got to Haiti, and then it went over Haiti and killed like 800 some people. And well, that's what we know that it's killed. And at that time, they released this beautiful radar image that shows a very scary face. And if you look on radio with pictures, we can actually pull that up and look at it.
Okay.
And it's my image number three.
Number three.
Mm-hmm. And the number three is the larger overall radar picture as it appeared on CNN.
Mm.
And,
oh,
you
my
know,
God, look at that.
Yeah, teeth and all.
That's been artificially tweaked and enhanced and changed so anybody sees it. It's obvious.
Well, of course it is. And this is what we woke up to yesterday morning. Yeah, it's what everybody woke up to on the news because it was blasted on all the channels. It's definitely psychological because when you see it, everybody can see that, man. This is not some subjective little old thing. You look at it, and what does it look like?
Talk about symbology.
Well, the first thing people are going to say, pareidolia, come on, guys, get real.
Yeah, well, this is pareidolia that's sponsored by CNN and all the other news agencies that blasted this out in front of us. So
now, when I kind of got onto this was when I looked at the track, because normally, you know, hurricanes have these wide kind of cones, whichever way they can move. And this one seemed like a beeline, and it seemed to be headed for the East Coast when it finally settled down. And then it appeared to be heading for the Cape, so I got really intrigued. And as I started looking at it, I thought to myself, okay, if this is a ritual war, if this is weather war, you know, because this damn thing is releasing energy equivalent to thousands of, you know, Hiroshimas every hour, who would be the enemy and what else might come along to would tell me that was not just random, but in fact this was designed, besides the eye geometry, the geometry in the center of the hurricane?
Well, Dane had the most interesting observation I've heard so far, and that's it's a distraction with all the stuff going on. It's a distraction. That's therefore the big clown face. Hey, everybody, look here.
It's well, sure but there's something else at another level. So, you know, given that these ritualists really are trapped into symbology at every level, alignments and all that. By the way, I haven't had Greg Ahrens do the celestial alignments for instance, when Matthew hit the Cape last night. It might be interesting to actually do that. When that eye wall crossed the Cape boundary and the 100-plus mile-an-hour wind started battering the Cape. Anyway, so I'm looking at this and I'm saying, okay, if it's ritual, then maybe the very naming of the hurricane. So I went looking, and let me go and check Other Side of Midnight here. I went looking to see if, in fact, there was anything significant about the name Matthew. And, oh, my God, what did I find? I don't know whether the link is up there yet. Let me go look. I had sent a link to Carlos earlier. I have to see if it actually got posted tonight. We had so much to do so late before the show because this whole show, of course, was not supposed to be We're supposed to be talking about planetary stuff tonight and things on Mars and all that. But if you go to Radio with Pictures, eventually a link will come up there. There is the background meaning of the name Matthew. It turns out it's from the Hebrew, and here's where I had to sit down. It means literally gift of Yahweh. So Matthew is a gift from God. So whoever's doing this, guys, think they are God. They have the technology to play God, and their bizarre sense of humor is gift from Yahweh, and oh yeah, an evil clown face as it's about to kill God knows how many people along the eastern shore of the United States.
Yeah, it's really funny. It's you know, and it goes along with the clown on the side of the road thing, that you know, meme that we've been seeing so much of lately.
Tell people about that. We were discussing this a couple of days ago, and they may not be up on this. Tell them about the phenomenon going on.
All over Facebook, it's in the news, it's in local papers. But you know, you have people that are dressing up as clowns and scary clowns and standing up on the side of the road and behind trees and behind cars and in parking lots and so forth. And, you know, it's, of course, you know, clowns, even evil clowns, is someone in a mask or, you know, someone with face paint and a Bobo nose. So, you know, it's not really threatening to me, and because I know the significance of clowns, but it sure gets a lot of people's panties in a wad, you know. So much so there's been evil clown beatings, you know, they catch some of these poor guys out. But, you know, it's a meme, and it's being foisted on us, just like, you know, if you watch Facebook, you see what's being promoted and what's not, and, you know, what they're trying to put into the consciousness. And the clown thing really is. And then all of a sudden they show up with this nice killer clown that's lurking off the coast of Florida. Just, you know, just came up through Haiti killing a bunch of people.
Well, was it you or was it Andrew Curry, who we were talking this afternoon in an email, and he went looking for references to Matthew, the hurricane. It was you. Okay, tell them what you found.
Yeah, well, I mean, I haven't been searching for pictures of evil clowns or anything, so it's not in Google. I was searching for pictures of the eye of Hurricane Matthew, and on the page where I searched for Hurricane Matthew, looking down through all the images, pictures of hurricanes, pictures of news screens showing newsmen in the hurricane, and then down toward the bottom of the page, there's an evil clown looking at me, and it was tied to a article that was about the hurricane. It's in some way on the same page as that article or whatever, and so that's why it came up in Google. But I thought it was pretty amazing how, you know, I'm looking through the images and that pops this evil clown on the image of, you know, on the page full of Matthew images.
Well, in this whole clown motif, we were all discussing, again, this is offline, we were discussing the idea that clowns suddenly popping up in social media. Clowns represent what? You know, a lot of kids I know are scared of clowns. Clowns, for most kids, they see them at the circus, all right? But I was thinking when I saw this first story, I thought, rodeo clowns. What's the job, Keith, of a rodeo clown?
To distract a bull.
Exactly. So I'm looking at this and I'm then saying, okay, what's this commentary about clowns / distraction? What's it trying to say? Is it trying to say, as Dane said, that Matthew is a distraction from everything else that's going on? Or is it saying that the election between Hillary and Donald Trump is the distraction from everything else that's going on? Because look, we're on the brink of war at several different levels. Next week we're going to have Dr. Spence on, and we're going to talk about the Russians and what Putin is up to and where we stand now. And there's also, you know, Pakistan and India. There's the whole Veda thing we're going to talk about. And I'm going to have Richard Grossinger here, my anthropological friend and head of North Atlantic Books, and Georgia Lambert. And we're going to try to get to the bottom and top simultaneously of what this election campaign represents anthropologically, metaphysically, historically, against the backdrop of these real major things going on. Now, again, I look at this Matthew thing a little differently because I see this as the beginning of a frontal assault. And remember I said last night that I felt the target was NASA? What was your response, Keith?
Well, what are they launching?
Exactly.
That was my response. And what was it? It turns out very interesting.
It turns out to be the next, you know, ultra super duper X model 29A super geosynchronous satellite designed to, among other things, totally bring up to the state-of-the-art monitoring, tracking hurricanes.
Yep.
So the spacecraft at the Cape that could have been destroyed by a hurricane last night directed at the Cape was actually designed to be the next generation of hurricane trackers. And if that isn't some convoluted soap opera, I don't know what is.
Well, you have to think about this also. If this is our state-of-the-art Ghost 5 satellite, which is to go up and 3D map anything, you know, weather-wise on the surface of the planet, well, then it's probably our control mechanism for our own weather system like this. And so, therefore, definitely a target by other powers who might not want us to have that.
So you're in the Dane camp, which is if we're in this huge, unacknowledged global meta-weather war situation, that would give us an advantage in the war that somebody may not. So, see, again, they didn't really do any damage. They totally monopolized their time. I don't know if anybody in the U.S. has been killed. I haven't seen the latest numbers. I mean, Haiti and Cuba, horrible. But if the objective was to basically sweep up along the east coast of the U.S., like, as Brian Williams said, a buzzsaw, but stay far enough offshore so you just scare the bejesus out of everybody, but you don't really kill a lot of people. In other words, is that all a feint? Is it all diversion from other stuff, as Dane said, we should at this moment be rapidly and carefully paying attention to?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, check Diego Garcia and see what they launched there. You know, I mean, there's no telling what they've done. You know, it's a mask. You know, you find on this that there are feints within feints within feints when you're studying this type of topic, because the lie is at so many levels. And they're doing something that has such gravity that, you know, it's just necessary for them to maintain that lie. And it's like Dane said, we're going to turn this planet into Mars. Then where are we going to go?
Well, yeah. That was my question. If they're all doing this and they're all still stuck here, but you see, if they have an escape hatch, if they really think they're going to go to Mars, they're going to go to the moon, or they're going to terraform Ganymede or Europa, whatever, their attitude is, given the actions we're seeing, the attitude is kind of like, we don't care because we don't have to stay here. I mean, nobody, even as megalomaniacal, I can say that, I think, this morning, and narcissistic could possibly be fouling their nest the way they're doing it unless they have a plan B. Unless they're just nuts. I mean, totally stark raving mad. Mm-hmm. Which is not, you know. Cheryl, you've been terribly, terribly silent.
Oh, I'm listening. I was just listening to you two. I'm just enthralled.
When you were at CNN, how difficult was it to get the suits upstairs to pay attention to big stories?
Well, I think within the confines of news operations, it's almost the unwritten word what is coverable and what isn't. And people that want to keep their jobs go along with the norm and know what the boundaries are and don't break them or don't pass over them. And I was going to mention when Dane was on, he left a little too soon. I agree with Keith. We would like to have had him on to talk a little further, but he mentioned the gag order with weather information, with NOAA and so on. And, you know, that situation, that just really shows one of our main problems in all of this stuff, and that is that without knowing the truth, without having ample information about every issue and what's going on, people are not going to make the right decisions. They're not going to be as concerned and as action-oriented about things if they don't know that it's a problem or that it's destructive or it's as serious as it is. So, you know, we're facing a whole crisis of censorship of information, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, the whole thing. So it all starts with the simple matter of not having the truth to start with, not having enough information. That plays into the whole thing with the media being biased, not reporting the main issues and getting consumed with filling the airwaves with 24/7 tabloidish stories. Look what's been happening in the campaign.
Oh, my God. You know, talk about
the
a meltdown.
On tabloid stories as opposed to what's important. And, you know, I have been watching with just disgust for so long with the anchors and reporters, not all of them, of course, complaining about why do we have to report on this and that the slanderous story or something else Donald Trump did or said. You know, he's got to start acting more presidential. Well, guess what? Donald Trump isn't their producer. He doesn't write their news scripts. He didn't hold a gun to their head and tell them they had to go on and report this story 24/7 endlessly. So the focus is on, really, the blame is on the media for what they choose to cover. In many cases, people wouldn't even know about some crazy stuff if the media didn't make an issue out of it. What if they focused on the problems with immigration, the problems with terrorism, the problems with the economy, with the trade agreements, with all the other main issues that we have? And, you know, there's where it starts. It's not, I don't think it's the candidate's fault. I think it's the media's fault for turning our media into a tabloid network or a poll network.
But
the
if,
same thing
but Cheryl, if there wasn't...
With the hurricanes and with the weather. I mean, with the gag order on weather information from the NOAA employees, that tells you right there what we're facing.
Well, this is why
we're
mainstream...
facing a lack of information, a lack of truth, because I really believe if people knew the kinds of things that they need to know or that we need to know to make good decisions in, you know, in our life or just to survive, you would have people who are far more engaged in these issues than they are. They don't. They're not engaged in these issues. And they're not active in fighting this or that because they don't know. Why do they not know? Because the media chooses to saturate the airwaves with tabloid stories instead of things that really matter, stories that matter, and the truth matters. And we are being denied the truth.
Okay, if people want to join this conversation, everybody out there, in the 160-plus countries we are in tonight or this morning or this afternoon, depending upon where you are, you can call us either at 505-796-8802, that's 505-796-8802, or on Skype, Enterprise Mission, or The Other Side of Midnight. And Sean, I'm trying to answer your call, but it says that if I answer your call, I have to put everybody else on hold, and I can't do that. For some reason, Skype is acting up again tonight. I did see one call flash up that had the group call on it, but before I could get to it, it went away. And unfortunately, Sean, I just can't pick up that call. Try calling on a regular phone. Try calling 505-796-8802. That's our phone number available through regular phones and or on Skype. Or if you're on Skype, Enterprise Mission or The Other Side of Midnight. Keith, in terms of data on this hurricane, well, we actually only have like a couple of minutes here to the bottom of the hour. But in terms on the data that this thing has been manipulated, when we come back, I want you to talk about the jet stream activity that you referenced in an email this afternoon. Because these things don't happen overnight. These things happen with a great deal of time and planning. And we have successfully connected to a caller. If you will hold their caller, we will take you when we come back. Everybody, kind of take a deep breath. We're here on the other side of midnight. My guest this morning, Keith Laney. Who you might wonder why Keith Laney, who's a member of our alternate planet, otherworldly imaging team, is a member of this panel tonight discussing potential artificiality in hurricanes. And the answer is because we're both pattern recognizers. And some of the key patterns of artificiality on Mars, geometry. When you find that geometry in the middle of a hurricane on Earth, you might just be forgiven for saying, maybe somebody is tinkering. You're on the other side of midnight, and we shall return. we are back on this Saturday morning, end of the week. We've lasted another week, my God. You know, it used to be that major news people looked at stories and there was like one major story a month, or if you were really lucky, maybe two. Now there's major stories every damn day. I mean, we had planned to do this thing on the hurricane tonight, and lo and behold, we have the Donald Trump escapade going on. Obviously, we can't deal with that until Tuesday. Why Tuesday morning? Well, that happens to be when Roger Stone is booked to be my guest. And oh boy, do we have a lot of interesting questions and conversation with Roger planned. So by all means, don't miss it. You're going to want to be there. Now, you're also going to want to listen to the archive after the show. You're going to want to relate what Roger says to other programs we've done on the campaign, on Trump, on third-party candidates, on Hillary. So you really need to join Club 19.5. He said strenuously, because things are getting too complex. You cannot keep all these things visualized, suspended in your mind. So go to the upper left-hand corner of the homepage, Radio with OtherSideOfMidnight.com, and you'll look at the how to join Club 19.5. Come on, it's $5 a month. You know, that's Starbucks. But you can't keep track of what's going to happen and where we were predicting trend curves months ago about what was going to happen unless you have that archive to refer to. Tim Saunders, who's writing us from, remember, he's over there in Turkey this morning, he mentions McDonald's and clowns to distract from evil food. I'm not sure I'm going to go that far. Anyway, back to Keith. So we were talking about data in terms of the manipulation of Matthew, and I told you the derivation of the name is gift from Yahweh. These guys are pretty cheeky. Now, M thinks that we, in these consciousness experiments, basically beat this sucker to a standstill last night. We've kept it offshore, and it's basically us doing it. Now, I'm perfectly willing to consider that that's possible, but I also saw this thing jog right around Cape Canaveral, literally jog to the right, a few hours, you know, so that the eye only touches the Cape, gets past the Cape, goes back to parallel to the coast. So if this thing is being manipulated, if it's being diverted by technology, what could we have done that could have fouled up their plans? Guys?
Well, we were watching the NEXRAD, and, you know, they have NOAA has the NOAA, NASA of weather here on planet Earth, has a site that has all the NEXRAD radars of the whole country tied together, and it's on a whole loop, and you can watch the whole thing happen. It's on a time delay.
Okay.
It's a wonderful thing. And we were watching this happen. Actually, me and Andrew were watching it, and they picked up a big storm and raised it up out of Texas and brought it over. It's just like Dane said. You create a low in one area, and the vortex flows toward that low. You know, it can't help it. You go from a high-pressure area to a low-pressure area.
Sure.
You know, it's a downhill slide for the, you know, for the hurricane. We watched them do this. We watched them pick up a storm. And you mentioned that a few days previously. I was kind of predicting what they were going to do with this a few days previously, because I was watching the Pacific Northwest and up around Oregon. I watched them. You can see on NEXRAD when they lay down huge layers of chemtrails. They laid down a big, long, straight patch that had to have been at least 150, 200 miles wide along the Oregon coast, and I watched them change the jet stream. So whereas the jet stream was in a pattern that sort of went across America and dipped down and then went northeast from sort of like the bottom of the Mississippi Delta and upwards in a big check mark, they changed it where it went straight across the top near Canada. It took a large upward turn. Now, we know they can change this jet stream on the same way that that Dane's talking about. They raise, with the ionospheric heaters, they raise a great big bubble in the atmosphere, you know, because when you heat air, it rises. And so when they do that, it pulls the jet stream up with it as it rises, and then they turn it off, and it drops it, or they create a low elsewhere beside it. And then, you know, the jet stream naturally takes the path of least resistance through it. And so when they did this, that allowed that, you know, I mean, when I saw that a couple of days ago, and then I knew the hurricane was right there in the Caribbean, I'm like, well, you know, that loss of convection there is going to cause that's going to cause the storm to come this way. And it sure did. And so that might have been something done by whoever was steering this thing to bring it in. But then we were watching last night, we watched them pick up a great big bunch of moisture out of the Texas and Midwest area and bring it northeast. And so what they did is they created a high pressure system through there and ran it ran it eastwards. And so that's what's keeping this off. You know, there's different factors in play in this. There's, you know, different factions at play in this, you know, and, you know, the technology is that, you know, it's scalar interferometers, you know, with the right people, with the right connections, you can have one at your company. You know, your small third world country can have one.
What's interesting is that on Dane's images, and if you go back to Radio with Pictures and kind of scroll up, because I'm looking at some of Keith's stuff right now, but go up to Dane's images. He's got images of these interference patterns. Actually, it's scrolling down. Sorry, guys, scrolling down. These interference patterns, these are patterns that Tom Bearden was showing me decades ago, created by what he termed the Soviets' woodpecker radar or woodpecker jamming system. Because these are standing wave patterns. These are wave patterns, and the water vapor in the Earth's atmosphere makes them visible, but the pattern would be there regardless of the water vapor. It's the pattern we're looking at, and the water vapor is like, as I said before, you know, dye in a stream. It allows you to trace the energy patterns that you can't see or detect with other technology.
Yeah, those clouds are quite strange, and it's like Dane said, they came up with names for them. and that's a recent, you know, that's a recent development. The reason why they had to have something to call them to make them sound believable. I first noticed these scalar patterns in the sky over Fort Polk, Louisiana. And, you know, that's a great big, huge military base. And as a military brat, we kind of took that as a sign that it's fixing to be maneuvers and Dad's going to be gone for a couple weeks. You know? And it would bring this little it would bring this misty, drizzly little rain that would last 2 or 3 days with little itty bitty micro droplets. I don't know if you're familiar with it because it happens all the time now, but you know, that's a really uncommon sort of thing. You know, this misty rain that lasts 3 or 4 days instead of big drops that fall from the sky like normal. And it's part of this pattern that Dane's talking about. You know, they're wrecking the climate so much by using this that, you know, there is no natural anymore. Well, we have great big thunderstorms that come up in the summertime, and then here come the chemtrailers to spray the tops of them down. You know, because why? Because the insurance companies are afraid it might damage somebody's roof and they'll have to pay a claim, and they're probably big sponsors of it. You know, and the government, because, you know, we're supposed to keep everybody safe. And so, you know, you got to think, we're wondering about the motivations of these people that do this. And, you know, some of them might think they're trying to do a good thing. You know, they're trying to save the Earth. But it's just the paradox of the way things are that sometimes doing that is just destroying the thing you're trying to save.
Lou from Facebook sends this message. Says, sounds like Richard takes the message on the Georgia Guidestones seriously. Well, when you put that message, which basically was, you know, the sustaining capacity of the Earth should be something like, what, 500,000 people? Or was it 500,000? I forget. It was an incredibly low number.
500 million.
500 million. Half a billion people. And if there are folks seriously thinking that they should cull the rest of the herd, doing all the big geoengineering things that are having exactly the opposite effect that Dane was describing, and then threatening geopolitical entities on the Earth with technology that they can't possibly match, like with Matthew, seems to be what's going on.
Yeah, well, you know, we have a long history of, you know, we're crazy as a country. If you don't believe that, then I've got some satellite images that you need to look at of the Nevada test site. Okay. Because we turned that place into the moon, and all the fallout from it washed right across the United States for all of us to breathe and live in for the rest of our lives. If we'll do that to our own desert, say, do you think it's in any big deal to run a hurricane up our coast?
Let me raise another possibility, and Cheryl, jump in here. There are various people who have been raising the idea. Joseph Farrell is one, and I can't think of the other guy. Richard Dolan is the other. That we basically are more than one civilization now. There's us on this planet that are basically using fossil fuels and getting very excited about things like electric cars, and we have, you know, incandescent lamps, and we have fireplaces, and we use a lot of oil. In other words, we're very, very primitive. But there's this kind of secret civilization that carved itself off either before or after World War II, which now is out there in the solar system and is partaking of all these incredible super technologies, and they kind of look at us as the poor stepchildren, the very poor cousins, the, as we used to say when I lived in the South, the white trash across the railroad tracks. Is it possible, guys, that this Matthew onslaught is from them, the breakaway civilization, basically warning this government by attacking the Cape, Cape Canaveral, that if you continue doing what you're doing, we will squash you like a bug, and here's how we can do it?
That's a distinct possibility. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Well, no, I was curious as to what you would say, but who knows what's going on with all of the technology that has to be in play to create all of this. I mean, at this point, we can't believe anything the government says. We can't believe anything the media says. We have less technology than the powers that be that's creating all of this at taxpayers' expense. And so what's a society to do? Breakaway civilization? Maybe. I mean, Keith, what do you think?
Well, I think it's got to be one or more of three different options here. You know, we either have a clandestine weather war going on between different powers, and this is, you know, being attacked by someone, and we're
when you say powers now, you mean powers on this planet,
like national
yeah.
powers,
national
yes.
powers here.
You know, where we're being attacked by somebody. You know, I mean, if you look right now at China, they're being hit. China, South Korea, and the Philippines are being hit by typhoons. I have watched in Surge 04, which was a gigantic naval exercise that just about our whole Navy went to the coast of China. There were three typhoons that were ahead of our Navy heading straight in. So, you know, but I mean, that's a possibility there. It's either a national and it's conflict between nations. It is a demonstration of our power, or either that, or it's a demonstration of our power using our weapons on our own land to show, because that's not uncommon. Look at the Nevada test site to show the world what we had and the power we had. We blew the fire out of the desert. I mean, it looks like the moon.
But raking the coast and causing billions and billions of dollars of damage just to show the other guy you're strong, that doesn't kind of make any sense.
Okay, well, I mean, we're going through the possibilities now. Or it is, like you said, and it, you know, it's almost like when you see this clown face and you realize that the storm's been manipulated and you know that it's a ultra-high technology that's doing this, it's almost like you wonder if there's not a Dr. Evil in the background going, $1 million.
Well, yeah, that's the other – all right, but see, if you go back to the storm tracks, and I'm going to come back to a point that M made – we may actually have had an influence here. I don't want to overstate things, but if you look at the track, the storm was poised to hit the Cape just after we got off the air. Within an hour, that eyewall was supposed to make contact directly at the southern southeast corner of Cape Canaveral, which sticks out there into the Atlantic Ocean. As soon as we get off the air, I'm watching the storm track, and the storm takes a nice jog to the upper right. And the next hour, you see it missing the Cape just by a few miles, and only the 100-mile-per-hour winds on the northwest side of the eyewall brush across the Cape for like an hour or so. The storm surge isn't very much. It's a few feet. They can handle it. They lost some power here and there. But basically, the Cape is fine, and that spacecraft is fine. But the Cape has never been exposed to this kind of frontal assault from a hurricane. The vertical assembly building, the big vehicle assembly building, I've got to go back to the original nomenclature, which is the building that was used to build the Saturn V rockets as well as the shuttle, that is only designed to withstand 125 miles an hour, and this was a 140-mile-an-hour Cat 4 storm bearing down on it until we got off the air, and then it makes this little jog. And I'm just wondering if maybe we did catalyze something, and we've kept it offshore now all the way up to Charlotte tonight. So everybody kind of focus, put your mind to this, and your heart, and your connection, and just imagine this thing dissipating and drifting south now out to sea, away from Charleston, away from South Carolina, away from harming any more people.
Yeah, well, you know what? You can see how the thing was rolled up and just bowled up the coast. I have a loop that's in my images. If you go to Radio with Pictures and go to my item number 6 and click on it, it's a GIF that shows it's a radar GIF showing the hurricane march its way up through Haiti and then straight up the coast. And it's pretty dramatic. When you can actually see on the time lapse where it kind of just takes off. I don't know if you're looking at this now, but you click on it, it opens up to an animation, and you can surely see it.
No, I'm looking at. Oh my, look at this.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you can't.
This is like it comes out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Like someone was turning up a switch. Oh, this is excellent. Yes, item number 6 under Keith's items. This is a nice GIF of the animation going up until mid-afternoon this afternoon, I think. Mm-hmm. Wow. All this technology. Cheryl, when you were back at CNN, did they use anything even approaching this, or is this all like magic? Is this like Arthur Clarke come true?
Well, everything is far more enhanced now than before, but yes, we had the time-lapse radar and satellite and all of that, but it's far more intense.
Because I remember a good friend of ours, John Holloman. Let's talk a bit about John Holloman. John Holloman would have loved this story.
Oh, he would have. John was just a consummate reporter. He was such a gentleman, such a great professional. He was just, it was just so sad what happened to him, really at the peak of his reporting.
If he was around now, he was the science editor for CNN. And
right.
John and I talked, because you set it up, we had an extraordinary conversation about the stuff on Mars, guys. And John, who had watched from afar our national press conference, the National Press Club, made an agreement on that conference call, Cheryl, for me to send him a whole bunch of stuff on Cydonia and a whole bunch of stuff on the possibility of an inhabited Mars and how it could have been done and what the data said and what Carlotta's measurement showed and all that. He was totally interested as a science story. And then 3 or 4 days later, John Holloman, science editor for CNN, was mysteriously killed in a car crash on a Saturday morning.
God, if he could see what we have now.
It was horrible. I mean, that happened just like you said, Richard, just a few days after we had the conference call and after you had sent him that information, and he was getting ready to do a program about John Glenn's return to space, and he was going to co-host it with Walter Cronkite, such a space enthusiast, and it was just so untimely. What happened with him?
Well, it was so bizarre, and I can't help but think, because I never got the package I FedExed him. I never got it back. Did someone see what he was going to take seriously, and did that set in motion a terrible sequence of events?
It's hard to know. It's certainly untimely, to say the least.
Well, that was then and this is now, and of course you're on the show this morning, as well as Dane and Keith, and a lot of people are listening. I have a feeling that we've gone beyond them being able to kind of throttle down the choke points. In other words, by getting rid of this reporter, you can kill interest in a story. Too many people are now watching. There's too much social media, too much interaction, too much ability with the technology to show people these images almost live. Anywhere in the world, this program can be received anywhere on the planet with a handheld device. That's democracy.
If we can avoid censorship of this information and keep the flow of information going as well as it should to everybody.
Okay, we've only got a couple, 3 minutes here left, guys. Anything you want to say on the idea here of weather wars and geoengineering, Keith?
Well, other than to say that it really needs to stop. I mean, it can't be any more catastrophic for our planet than what's going to happen to it if they continue throwing Mother Nature out of balance by messing things up. But then again, this is Kali Yuga, you know. The bad gets worse, you know, and the good gets better because we're approaching the age of heroes that brings the next age.
Yeah, I just kind of wish it would hurry up and get here.
Yeah, well, that's the reason why we're here, Richard, to try to usher it in.
Cheryl, in the couple minutes we got left here, how would you go about getting major news mainstream attention to stories that are of enormous human import, but are not as titillating as Donald talking about doing you-know-what with a soap opera star.
Well, I think with social media, that's probably the tool that people have to work with. And it all starts with the truth. People are becoming more informed and more aware just with the information that Dane has. And I think we have to take the story, the headline, to the level of why should I care? Because I think we have complacency. We have complacency because people don't have enough information. But if they know why, they should be concerned about what's being done to our atmosphere. If they understand what's happening with health, with neurological problems, and more illnesses and respiratory issues, as Dane referred to, then it relates to them personally. I think until we make the connection between what it is and how it affects me and you and Joan and John and Jane, there's no interest because everyone is so overcome and overwhelmed with all their daily activities and family and deadlines and schedules and work and school and everything else. We have to make it personal. We have to take that truth, and if we can't get the truth from mainstream media, we have to let mainstream media know we're not interested in tabloid news. We don't care what an 11-year-old video showed when Donald Trump thought that his mic was off and he was doing locker room talk like a lot of men do.
Like a lot of men. Okay, we only have a few minutes. We've got some callers lining up over Idlewild. Area 425, please sign in.
Richard, Bob here from just north of Seattle again.
Hi, Bob.
One of the things that frustrates me greatly on all of these conversations that you've had on is nobody names names, nobody names bureaus that are running these things, nobody comes up with where are they buying the material, since they're obviously relatively specialized, and nobody comes up with the follow the money. How are they paying for it?
Excellent questions. Keith?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. But, you know, we're looking at a clandestine operation that's multifaceted. You know, it should have holes all in it. You are correct. And that's a good line to follow. And maybe that's something to develop. And that's a good suggestion, man. I appreciate it.
And I'll
listen
off the air. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
And that goes back. The truth matters. We're not being given the truth. We don't know these things because that information is not given to us.
Well, if these are special access programs, which of course are notorious for never briefing Congress, you'll never find them looking through the conventional budget process. I remember years ago, a friend of mine, Richard Souter, who's been big into underground bases, he started looking through these stats to see if he could see big shipments of concrete and steel and other things that were not supposed to be on the books. And he found some interesting patterns, but it's very difficult to track it down. Okay, Area 407, sign in, please.
Yeah, this is Porter from Leesburg, Florida.
Hi, Porter.
I want to bring up, good evening. Your show needs to be about 2 hours longer every night, by the way. I want to bring up 2 points. One's about the money. You can take a look at these world leaders or the Illuminati, whatever you want to call them, people like Rockefeller and Gates and Turner that want world population cut down. There's a lot of money there. And then you take a look at big pharmaceutical. You know, we take a look at the spraying aluminum in the air and breathing them. Well, aluminum is one of the suspected causes for autism, which has increased more than 100%.
Which, by the way, will connect with what I'm going to talk about with Dane when he's on the show next time. So you might want to call in and remind me of that. There's an interesting potential connection there. But please continue.
Okay. The reason I say that is because, you know, you take a look at some of these nefarious projects that are going on, and they stretch over decades. So to do something like spray aluminum, for the ultimate goal to reduce world population is a possibility.
Okay, but I come back to my first question, which is these guys live here too. If they're doing this, they're killing themselves, their children, their grandchildren. So what's the missing factor? Do they have an escape hatch? Can they get out of here when Dodge collapses?
Well, I've read recently on the Internet, you know, the information there is not always accurate, but I know Gates and Rockefeller have built tremendously large underground complexes. So maybe these folks, including some perhaps government entities, are preparing for something like that to save themselves versus the rest of us, as you call us, from the other side of the track. Anyway, great show. I'll let you go. Again, make the show about 2 hours longer every night, would you, Richard?
Thanks a lot. I'll have to get a call. I've got to have Data to sit in for me then. Okay. Hey, guys, we got maybe 2 minutes left. Thank you so much, caller. Any last thoughts? Do we do this all again?
Are you talking to us?
I'm talking to you.
Okay. Yes. Well, I think it's been a great show. I've really enjoyed listening more than talking. And, Keith, it's nice to meet you by radio or Internet.
You too.
Oh, there he is. And thanks for showing those images on the website, especially with the animation and with the clown face.
Amazing, isn't it? Okay, guys, that's the end of the show. There's our music. Hey, everyone out there in radio land in 160 countries, pay attention. The United States is either melting down or we're going to get on top of all of this and surprise everybody in the next 4 weeks. We can hope. So until same time, same bat channel next week, next Tuesday morning with Roger Stone, remember, third star on the left, straight on till morning. Good night, everyone, and stay safe out there.